Thanks for downloading this Little Empire podcast. This show has a real-life, live-record event that you can come to in Auckland, New Zealand during the NZ International Comedy Festival powered by Flick Electric Co. Deets and tickets at comedyfestival.co.nz.
Thanks a lot to Big Pipe for sponsoring this episode of The Male Gaze.
Oh, Big Pipe, they do such a good service. They provide free, not free. They're not free. Look,
they're free internet for everyone.
They pay free internet to all children, but for adults, their packages are basically pretty much, they start at just $69.
Woo-hoo! And there's no data caps, 2 months free with the passcode UFB Switch.
Ooh.
Thanks, Big Pipe.
Bye-bye.
I'm sorry, Mom. It's not a phase.
And welcome along to this episode of The Male Gaze. Hi, Eli.
Hey, Chris. It's so nice to hear your voice. I'm in bloody Australia and I miss you.
I miss you too, mate. It's been a long time. And look, apologies to the fans. All 10 of you. We're so sorry.
We have had at least one person asking on the Facebook page for us to do another episode. So this is going out.
Such a boost for our egos, isn't it?
It really is. Makes us feel good, especially for me. Tonight I'm doing a show in Melbourne, Melbourne Comedy Festival. I don't know how many people I got booked so far, Chris.
How many, Eli?
Uno. One. One person. I'm terrified. It's been going great so far, but if you know anyone in Melbourne and this podcast goes out before my show, which is at 9:45, which is in four and a bit hours.
It's not going to happen.
Oh, Tim's quick, though.
Nah, it won't. Mate, I'm sorry. It's just going to be one person. But that one person, Eli, that could be the director of, you know, Seinfeld or something, you know? And so you never know who's in that room.
The director of Seinfeld?
Is that a big deal
scouting?
For you?
Yeah.
He's scouting
at
Melbourne Comedy Festival. He's looking for new voices.
Well, I've seen at least, I reckon, about 7 episodes of Seinfeld. Is that bad?
I haven't really watched much of it. To be honest, I don't watch much comedy that doesn't have a gay narrative in it. Or stars women, like just a whole cast of women.
And have you been watching Feud?
No, I haven't been watching Feud. I'm terrible.
I think it would serve you well to catch up on it.
This is the thing. I've got time for one show in my life, usually, to watch. Mm-hmm. And currently, it's RuPaul's Drag Race. All current and all surrounding media of that show, like that they have on YouTube and Untucked. And then there's just no time for anything else.
That's fair. And who, by the way, are you supporting on RuPaul's? I know we've talked about this online, but not since we've got this many episodes in.
Okay, so let's just do, before we get into our fact of the game, let's do a quick RuPaul's recap for us, eh?
Yes.
So for those who don't watch the show, by the way, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast. the crossover feels really small with people who...
The Venn diagram is just like two circles on top of each other for fans of RuPaul's and fans of The Male Gaze.
You're like, it looks like one circle. You're like, no, it's two. You need 3D circles. Glasses.
or our circle is just a tiny circle, but it's inside a giant RuPaul circle.
It's a donut.
Yeah.
It's a donut. It's a donut hole.
With a donut hole in the middle of the RuPaul's fans.
So my top three, probably, I'm a huge fan of Shea Coulee. I think she is dynamite. I think she's so fun and fresh. Oh my God. But number one, Valentina.
Crushing I love so hard. Valentina. She's so beautiful. And
I'll be surprised if she takes it out.
Bubbly and funny.
She's so bubbly and funny. I'll be surprised if she takes it out. Like, I think she's amazing. I don't know. Like, she hasn't, like, I haven't been, like, clear winner. But she is the faith. And... also just so hot as a girl and so hot as a guy. It's just brilliant.
Love her eyebrows. Oof. Woof.
Woof. And I feel like probably set a bit of a trend with those eyebrows a little bit. Like I feel like people will copy the Valentina eyebrow, which is like iconic.
Absolutely.
And the other drag, it's a tie probably between Nina Bonina and Sasha Velour. They're just like... I'm waiting. I'm a big fan of Sasha Velour. She got blew me away like in her very first appearance and stuff. But then I kind of hasn't made a splash yet.
Well, both of them, I think. Like, Nina Bonina as well. When I first episode, I was like, winner. I was like, this is the winner. She looks amazing. I love how crafty she is. But then she's kind of a little bit shy. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. I feel like she's holding back. Despite the fact that in the latest episode, she had that, like, tits out.
God, that was
dominatrix.
So good. Such a brilliant look.
And untucked when she's, like, lying back like a crucified Jesus Christ with her giant boobs.
I loved it. She's, like, clutching her breasts and just staying out of the drama. Who's your top three?
It's pretty similar. I think it's Nina Bonina, Shea Coulee, and Valentina.
Yeah.
I'm not in love with Sasha Velour yet, but I think she could get there. I also think, I also am quite fond of Trinity. Me and my boyfriend have had a few fights about it because he doesn't really like pageant queens in any way.
Yeah.
But I think Trinity's strong. She's some strong looks. She killed that lip sync she didn't even have to. Like, she could have, like, done half and then sat down and she would have still beat Charlie Hides.
I just don't think I would have... I would be, like, so excited if she was coming into the country. You know what I mean? Like, if, like, Valentina was doing a show in New Zealand, I would just, like, drop as much money as I could to get there. And I feel like that is the sign of a true winner.
Absolutely.
We could talk about this for hours, but we've got to get into it, hey?
Yes, look, did you prepare a fact of the game? Because I've also prepared one.
Mine wasn't a fact of the game. Mine was just mainly like I read like the front page of like every single gay website that I read to find something good. And it's just kind of like gay current affairs. But okay, I'd love to hear your fact if you've got one. And then I'll just dabble on my bit of current affairs.
So this one was sent to me by my sister, Joya. Shout out to Joya Kelly. She sent me a couple of ideas over this hiatus. She's had like four. She's like, are you doing a podcast today? Here's a fact of the game. And I was like, no, we haven't done one for 3 weeks. Because we're bad people.
God, has it been 3 weeks? Oh,
it's been a while, mate.
I'm so glad to be back.
It is. I'm having a lot of fun here, sitting in my Airbnb room alone, holding my phone in front of my face. So, Anne Lister. Ever heard of her?
No.
Well, you're about to hear about it because they've just announced an 8-episode co-production between BBC and HBO about her life, right? They're making a drama about Anne Lister, right? She was alive from 1791. She was born and she died in 1840. Yeah, and she's still killing it.
She's smashing out looks. She's amazing. Okay, she's
so hot.
She's a woman from the past. That's all I know so far.
So here's the quote about the TV show they're about to make. It's produced.
This is the hook. Right?
Written by. It's a bit of advertising.
Like, yeah. I love it.
It's written by a BAFTA award winner, Sally Wainwright, related to Rufus. Who knows?
Who knows?
She said. Anne Lister is a gift to dramatists. She is one of the most exuberant, thrilling, and brilliant women in British history, and I can't wait to celebrate her. Landowner, industrialist, traveller, mountaineer, scholar, would-be brain surgeon, and prolific diarist. To bring her to life is going to be great, she said. So she did all those amazing things. She's climbed mountains. I don't really know what the brain surgeon thing is. I've kind of skimmed this article, and now I'm trying to look back to find...
It's like pottery. It's like dabble in brain surgery.
Yeah. Would be brain surgery. Sounds like she.
It's her side
hustle. I
mean,
I hope she didn't try and do one and then not succeed. Oof, I don't know. Anyway, she had a bunch of different lovers over the years, all female. She inherited from her family. Her family all died, and then she inherited this.
I was looking for the male gaze link. I was like, is she straight? Is this about a straight woman who climbed the mountain?
She's just a great woman that did some great things.
I was like,
and I think we should put more woman at the forefront.
I was like, I mean, this is great. It sounds like a great movie, but I don't know if this is like fact of the gay material.
Today's fact of the gay is the life of Kirsten Dunst, who I just think is really good.
I straight up would love to know more about that.
About Kirsten Dunst?
I would like to see the scene where she's cast and Bring It On.
Oh, yes, same. I mean, I kind of want to know what she's up to now, because so for me, I thought Melancholy was going to be her career making performance.
Yeah.
It's such a good, she's so good in it. And then since then, what's been going on? She played the kind of like slightly racist, but not too racist one in Hidden Figures. she's kind of like racist, and then at the end, she was nice.
I always get nervous that that's like the actor like being really nervous about like wanting to be seen, like being about scared about being seen negatively and it being bad for their image. I'm like, well, you just gotta do the job of like being a monster, like to, in order to tell that story correctly.
Totally. Do like, you reckon? Are you like, did Kirsten Dunst request that she submitted the script? She was like, we're just going to add this scene in the end.
She's like, oh, I just don't want to be this mean. And they're like, oh, right, we'll give you one smile at the end of the movie where we're like, oh, maybe she's got the potential to learn.
One smile?
Yeah, like a knowing That's... smile and a nod where you're like, yeah. Maybe she's not that racist.
Mm.
Like, no, and... Kirsten, be the monster. I keep going about this woman. Yep.
I would have preferred... to see Kirsten play a full monster as well. But she's in a new movie coming out with Nicole Kidman. Have you seen this one by Sofia Coppola? Set during the American Civil War, where like a gentleman visits their all-woman female boarding house in the middle of nowhere. Oh, it looks good.
Yeah.
Looks bloody good, Chris.
But what about... So this is this movie. I mean, is there more facts or is this just a teaser for a film?
No, I just got a press release. I just sent a press release from the BBC. No, Anne Lister. Oh. So she's described as having a masculine appearance by some of her lovers, right? In fact, she was known about the town as Gentleman Jack because she used to walk around just wearing blacks, right? She owned a colliery, which is like coal mining.
Whoa.
Coal mining. She was super, super rich, right? She ran this hall and she got income from the people who lived in the hall with her, as well as the agricultural features of the hall.
Is she just like... Super, super rich. Is this the story of the very first power lesbian?
I think you're absolutely right. She's certainly known as kind of one of the first modern open lesbians, right?
Wow.
And she was super open about her affairs, but so they found all these details in her diaries, but everything about her romantic relations was written in a secret code of kind of like the Greek alphabet and some other things that she mixed together to make the secret code.
This woman is smart.
She's real smart. So first she was with this woman called Mariana Lawton, who was married with kids, and the husband knew about it, and he just let her do it until she wasn't allowed to anymore. But for a few years she went for it, and then she had this affair with another wealthy heiress called Anne Walker, and they got married, Chris.
What?
So obviously there's no kind of like official legal recognition because it wasn't legal, you know.
They had promise rings.
They had beautiful promise. They had Jonas Brothers style promise rings.
They were like mood rings, and they changed depending on their mood. And they're like, "Are we on the rocks? Because my ring's gone purple."
Imagine that if there was moon rings that actually it was like something you need to talk about with your partner. They glowed a color, so you couldn't avoid it.
Yo, my ring is red. What are you keeping from me? And they're like, I've had an affair. And they're like, fuck, this ring. Get it off.
Why did we buy these? I can't believe this was only $2 as well. The technology is incredible.
It's incredible technology. Mood rings are the worst technology. I feel every mood ring I put on, I've tried to tense my finger and then the mood ring has got stuck. But then I've panicked and I haven't been able to get it off my finger. I've got huge fingers.
Also, I'll say they're ugly as hell.
Oh, bro. I don't know.
Rings.
No, I think they're kind of cool.
Oh.
But I just haven't had one big enough to fit my fat ass fingers.
Oh, I used to wear them all the time. They'd always come up a mixture of two colors and like two colors that just didn't work. So it'd be like angry happy. And I was like, what? When are you angry happy? After you've done like a vengeful murder or something.
Oh, yeah, you're like, oh, I'm so angry I killed that person, but happy they're out of my life.
Yeah. Anyway, Anne Lister, she married Anne Walker, right? But eventually they were on, I mean, this story, it's been good so far, but like they went on a holiday to Russia or a journey, I think maybe mountaineering, and then old Lister got an insect sting that reacted very badly. She died.
Oh,
then Anne Walker.
Yeah.
I know, and spoilers for the end of this BBC HBO drama coming up, but she died. Anne Walker brought her body back, and Anne Lister had left the whole estate, that hall I mentioned earlier, to Anne Walker, but it was taken from her by her family, and then she was put into a mental home.
Jesus.
But 49 good years Anne Lister had, by the sounds of things.
Starts as kind of a comedy and then gets quite bleak,
quite dark.
Doesn't it? Quite
Very sad. Also, I'm really trying to... I'm scouring Wikipedia right now to find any details about the brain surgeon part of the story. And I can't find a single thing apart from that quote.
Well, I don't think anyone needs to go see the movie because you've pretty much given the entire plot out.
That's not a movie. It's an 8-part series. And I imagine, you know, I'm obviously watching over some details.
Yeah.
I'll be watching to find out when she cuts a brain open.
My fact of the gay / my just like gay current affairs was that about that Survivor scandal. Did you hear about that?
I was watching it today in the gym on mute. At the gym that I've been going to in Melbourne, they put the subtitles on.
What was the body language telling you, Eli?
It looked controversial. It was actually not, I wasn't watching Survivor. I was watching The Talk, which has Sharon Osbourne. It's like The View, but Sharon Osbourne is the kind of main anchor. They had a really bleak interview with Haley Joel Osment, and then after that, they got the Survivor contestant on. He had a hard time.
Hello, listener. This is Tim Batt, interrupting your podcast to bring you a short ad that is only relevant to people in my home, New Zealand. If you're not in New Zealand, my apologies. The NZ International Comedy Festival, powered by Flick Electric Co, is happening from April 27 till May 21 and features literally every single Kiwi on this podcast network. There are many, many great live comedy shows happening, so if you enjoy this podcast, chances are you'll enjoy seeing them live. Go to comedyfestival.co.nz and buy tickets to some great shows now. That's comedyfestival.co.nz.
Yeah, so for those who don't know the story, there was like two contestants on Survivor who like both were kind of publicly gay. And that's how everyone kind of viewed them on the show. And then they kind of had a good sort of relationship going where they would like sort of share secrets. I haven't even watched the episode, but this is just what I've been reading up on about it. Anyway, in the tribal council, Jeff Varner, who's one of the gay men, he's slightly older than the other guy, Zeke Smith, he outed Zeke as being transgender as a tactic, as saying that like you can't trust Zeke because he'd been keeping this as a lie. Anyway, obviously the whole thing is just like crumbled underneath Jeff, and then he was just like outed out of tribal council immediately. Like, who's the host of tribal council?
It's been the same guy for the whole
time. His name, he must be working it in. Anyway, he was just like, give me a candlestick, mate. We are sending you out of here. And then I was just reading up a story today that the guy, Jeff Varner, who outed Zeke, lost his job as like a real estate agent as well when he came back. So it's like impacted him.
But
it's so bad what he did. It's terrible, especially with reality television where you kind of can't like edit that stuff out because it's like sort of that's how it's going to roll along.
That's the drama. Well, he was, the trans guy was on The Talk today, and he was talking about it, and he said one of the reasons that he wanted to do the show, even though he never disclosed that he was trans in any of the application procedures or anything like that, but one of the reasons he wanted to do it is because he was such a huge fan because of how raw and real everything was on the show. So he was, like, happy that moment had been left in.
Oh, what an absolute... I mean, it's so brave.
Yeah.
And kudos to him for doing that. And
absolutely.
I think that's really incredible. And like, you know, all awareness is like, you know, now that it's out and people are talking about it, I mean, that's kind of like a sort of a silver lining, but it's just so sad it had to happen that way.
Yeah, that's, no one should ever treat anyone else like that, in my humble opinion.
Oh, you go.
You go.
I was just going to say, that whole thing of like outing people is kind of yuck. Like, it actually makes my, like, gives me like goosebumps. And like, especially when I was closeted, like, I just always felt like people were trying to out me. And I was like, this is not your journey. Get your own bloody boat and sail away. I'll dock this ship when I'm ready, baby.
There's a guy in, you have this guy in New Zealand, his name is like, his Twitter name is like Real Steve Grant or something. He's like an old school gay journalist from the 90s. And his
Steve
thing
Gray.
Now, Steve Gray. Oh, and all he does is like, well, I don't know if it's all he does, but what I know about him is that he just basically tweets at celebrities asking them to out themselves or saying they don't talk about their sexuality enough or all this stuff. And it's so nasty and so stupid. And he's got a real Count Olaf kind of vibe to him, to be honest.
It's very presumptuous because you have no idea about the kind of like backstory of these people and why maybe, well, one, if they are in fact, gay? Or two, why, if they are, and if you know they are or something, why they're not addressing with it? Whether that be like religious, family, personal reasons. There's a whole array of things. It's like, just don't prod the beast. Just like leave it, you know? Let
totally.
Not to say that this is a beast, but it's just like, you
know, I'm
just
a beast.
I'm a beast.
My homosexuality is beast-like.
I'm beastie.
It comes roaring out of me.
I'm beauty and beast. I identify as sort of half beauty, half beast.
I do think like your idea about like your pride and your openness with it is something that changes and transforms as you experience your own life as well. And you can't make someone speak more outwardly about something if they're not ready to yet at any time.
Completely.
Because I definitely
Oh, you go.
Oh, sorry. This is so much harder without seeing each other because normally we'd nudge each other's knees. Yeah. When I first came out, I was like, oh, I'm just going to be like a normal guy who just happens to be gay. You know, like that kind of
vibe. Oh my God, that is so problematic.
I know. But it's very easy to think that, to be like, I don't want this to define me. And then later on, you're like, nah, it's a huge part of my life and I'm going to talk about it all the time. I'm going to start a whole podcast about it. Get ready.
There's a lot to unpack in that. But I thought maybe just like to the end of this like little wee poddy for today, we should talk a little bit about like gays on tour, the fact that we've both kind of been away. That's why we've had this weird sort of hiatus. You're in Australia, mate, across the Tassie. It's our first Tassie episode. And I've been in a beautiful small town, New Zealand, touring the show that I'm in about an iconic gay cooking duo, Hudson and Halls. And I've been taking
Hudson and Halls
to the regions.
Which small towns have you been in?
Well, just two. One, Kerikeri, up in right up north in the North Island, and then Wanaka, which is not really a small town. It's more of like, it's kind of like New Zealand's Aspen, but it's like right down south.
It's just by Queenstown, so it's almost like in the tourism hub, really, isn't it?
No, it's full tourism down there. And like really different kind of like audiences down there, like in those two different areas. Like Wanaka is just like full. The way I describe Wanaka is like everyone's son is gay. Like all the parents are kind of like have a gay son. It was sort of what it feels like. They're all a little bit like floating on the left. They're all retired. They drink a bit of wine. You know, they're
floating
all
on the left.
Fun. They've all got a lot of. They're all kind of like subtle millionaires.
Nice. Oof.
And I kind of thought Kerikeri was going to have the same vibe, but I had two extraordinary, like crazy experiences in Kerikeri. So
really?
At the end of the show, Hudson and Halls, we invite the audience to come up and get photos with us as in character, so like they can put it on their Facebook. It's a very cute
Hudson
idea.
Halls, by the way, we should say they're like they had a gay, very gay cooking show
In New Zealand. You can Google them. They were celebrity chefs in the 80s, and they loved each other. But it was before the homosexuality law reform, so like legally they weren't allowed to be gay, but they were like entertainers of the year in New Zealand. It's this kind of crazy chapter in New Zealand's television history. So anyway, people get out photos with us at the end of the show. They're very camp characters, and so you always kind of get these people who are like sort of in like feeling a bit sort of jazzed after being around this sort of campness for a while, and they're sort of a bit outrageous, and they sort of say things they don't really mean to, these kind of middle-aged women who've enjoyed the show. So we get this group of women come up to get a photo with Todd, the other actor, and I, and their husbands stay in the seats, and it's just the women who get the photos. And so Todd and I turn to the women and we say, do the men want to come up and get a photo with us as well?
Yeah.
And the woman turns to Todd and I and replies, no, the men don't want to get a photo with you. They're homophobic.
Oof.
Like, just said it to our face as if, like,
Jesus.
I don't know, it was like a nut allergy or something. It was... It was
they're intolerant.
Wild.
So
they're intolerant. I'm sorry. They were around gays earlier. They just flare up. They rash. So it's best if they stay away. It was wild, and I was kind of like,
it's bananas,
speechless. And then later that night, we went out for dinner after the show, and we're at this like Mexican restaurant. And then a cop car pulls up, You know, it's a really like, it's, I don't know, like a Thursday night. It's very quiet in Kerikeri. The office is like just finishing his like duty. And what's the, I don't know what
is
the
it called
correct,
duty?
I don't know. It's like playground duty.
I'm doing my comedy duty tonight, actually.
Yeah. just walking around finding the comedians. Anyway, so he walks out of his cop car. He's in full uniform. He doesn't see us in the restaurant, but he sees his friend. And his friend who went to the show, and he yells out at the top of his voice, "Hey mate, how was the show with the homosexuals?" Really loudly. And again, it was like this like second sting of just like, I mean, it's not like inherently offensive what he said, but his kind of, it was one of those things where there was an ingrained homophobia or homophobic kind of tone to it. And also being like, sort of saying the homosexuals as if you'd say like the orangutans at the zoo
or something. Yeah, it's like it's a freak show or something. Yeah, like, they've come to visit town we've never met any ever before in our lives.
It's like town was abuzz knowing that the gays were in town.
That's
and it was
crazy.
Just a real shock, I guess, like just being out of this little Auckland bubble and being in an area where, like, oh, it was just a reminder, you know, that like even in these sort of smaller towns, it's, you know, it's at a different pace, like we're advanced in different ways. But then again, then you'll find a beautiful pocket where like there was this guy who ran a cafe in Wanaka, and I spotted it because there was like a rainbow flag on the outside of his cafe, and I was like, bingo, we're in. And I was so happy to see it. And like that whole rainbow flag thing, like I remember when I was first coming out, I was like, I don't know if I like how I feel about like just like completely identifying into this flag. Like it's, I imagine that like if you were part of that 70s movement where that flag was like really important to you, like it would be, it'd really feel like a part of your identity, but I just didn't really like link it to me. But then walking past this cafe, I was so relieved to see it. Like I was like, oh my God, like I know that there's someone in that cafe who I could chat with, and I know he feels certain ways that I agree with, and we're similar kind of people. He might, like, I didn't know him, but I just kind of feel like I feel there's a connection here, and I'm like grateful that he's put that flag out. Totally. And also being in a small area, like that takes a bit of bravery.
Absolutely. I feel the same way now. It's like a symbol. It's like shoes over the fence. It's like this is the place that's gonna be okay for you to visit. How was the food and the coffee at this cafe though?
Oh my God, it was like, oh, don't get me started on small town cafes, eh? Like it's ludicrous what's going on there. Like, and someone needs to do a report on it. It's like
you need to do a Tams. Is it Tams sell and bake makeover takeover?
What are you doing with your microphone? I feel like I'm under the covers with you.
I am in bed, and I don't. Oh, I'm not under the covers. What does it sound like?
Like you're rubbing the microphone on your genitals.
Oh, you know what I've been doing. So the listeners won't be able to hear this because I'm recording this on my phone, which is by my face. But the microphone of my laptop is on the side of the laptop, so I've been kind of stroking the side. Stroking the USB holes. Look, I'm very sexually frustrated right now. I have ripped so many labels off so many beers while I'm here. I worked out, because in my show I do a big joke about the movie 40 Days and 40 Nights, about how like Josh Hartnett goes without sex for that amount of time. And I in my mind, I'm like, 40 Days and 40 Nights, that's not that long to go without sex. I've definitely done that. But at the moment, I'm in the midst of 42 Days and 42 Nights. That's how long we're apart while I'm doing comedy festivals. And it sucks so bad. Like, obviously, it's also just like it's an early relationship and we're in the throes of passion, so missing each other very strongly as well. But also, oh my goodness, it's just different. I'm sharing a bed with Alice Needham from Bottles of the Heart. Yeah, that's how it worked out. I was in a bunk for a while. There was too many of us, so now I shacked up with I'm in a sned bed, and
I feel like that this is putting like too much heat on your relationship with her already, which was like, to be honest, fiery would be a word for it.
We're already in each other's face 24/7 without having to sleep in the same bed.
That's so gorgeous.
She'd go,
She went away. She stayed with her sister, came to Melbourne. So for like 4 nights, I had this double bedroom to myself, and it was so legit. She does one thing. I mean, I don't want to gossip, but here's the thing that I think this is like sharing bed etiquette with a lover or a friend, right? She, yesterday morning, she'd set an alarm and she pressed snooze like 5 times. And I was like, that's fine if you're by yourself, but I'm here and it's waking me up every time the alarm goes off.
Be honest with yourself and turn that and just like turn that alarm off.
Yes. Other than that, it's going all good though.
Bless her. Oh, I miss Alice Sneddon. I miss you all. Hey, and so tell me, how's gay life in Melbourne? I presume it's more positive than Kerry.
It seems very positive. I mean, I wish my boyfriend was here and I could go striding through the streets holding hands. No, it's been good. I've seen some wonderful gay comedy and I've done some gigs which I thought were going to be like kind of a bit crazy and but they were all good. They were super. In fact, I think audiences here that go and see comedy, I mean, I don't know how to make a call. But at the moment, I'm like, oh, I seem to fit in most shows, which happens mostly in New Zealand. But there are some small town gigs that I do that are like,
do you feel different being in a country that doesn't acknowledge same-sex marriage? Like, is there something in you that shifts or adjusts?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's so weird. You kind of just want to, like, go and scream at people. And the ending of my show. So I'm doing my show here and then in New Zealand, and it's quite impassioned here because I talk about, weirdly, I talk about Beauty and the Beast for a long time at the end of my show. And about Josh Gad and Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
So we did a whole podcast and now it's in my show as well. But
have you seen the movie?
Yes. Have you seen it?
Yeah, finally. And Kerry.
The gay moment is just the biggest piece of bullshit. Although, so...
it did so make my heart skip a beat a little bit. But I wish, like, if there was more of it, like, I would have been even happier.
I just hated the character. I hated Lafoe. I was, like, such a drip. Such a pain. What I did like was when the wardrobe bursts open and then that guy gets in the dress and loves it. And so I went to it with my boyfriend who just sat there for the whole film. And then when that happened, he like raised his hand straight in the air and clicked his finger and shaked his head.
I love that.
I miss him
when
so
that
much.
Happened, when you first meet him as that guard, like,
yes.
I was with like a whole row of homosexuals and we all went, ooh, like we all kind of like shuffled in our seats and there was nothing to say that he was gay, but we all knew, like our gaydar, because we were like on high alert for a gay moment. And we were like, is that it? And then when we saw him, I was like, he's a homosexual. I bet he's a homosexual. And then he's the guy that hooks up with Lafoe. So that was
I mean, they don't even hook up. They accidentally dance with each other.
let's hope that they boned that night.
Yeah. Hey, talking about gays on tour, here's another thing as well. I've booked this holiday to Tonga in June. It's right after the comedy festival, a little break. And I'll tell you what, we booked it because the flights were very cheap. And then we looked up laws and turns out homosexuality is illegal there. And
my God.
Public displays of affection, very frowned upon. But apparently the PDA thing is not just gay couples, it's like straight couples. Any signs of public affection are sort of frowned upon. But now, wow. If there's any listeners out there who've been to Tonga before, tweet in your accommodation suggestions and your suggestions, please.
That's an interesting, but that's where this like whole like going back to that kind of rainbow flag thing on the window like really becomes like a useful tool.
Totally.
Yeah.
Not just a useful tool. Like, imagine if you were in Russia now, and is it Chechnya or wherever the
Chechnya, yeah.
Where those guys have been abducted.
Oh my God.
Terrifying. God. Yeah. And it must like not just a useful tool, but like a I don't know, like a tool of war almost. I mean it must be
a survival. Exactly.
Up.
But I was thinking this before, like even when you said about like holding your hand with your boyfriend in Melbourne, like it's crazy. But like I think about a lot about taking my boyfriend back home to Christchurch, which it feels kind of conservative down there. And I'm like, even holding his hand in the street sometimes actually feels like an act of protest, or like you're just kind of claiming that space.
Absolutely.
And like even when I do it in Auckland, sometimes it's like. Like in certain areas of Auckland where you just feel a slight adjustment in your body where you're like, it just feels I just have to, I feel like I have to be on guard a little bit or alert that I feel like some people like aren't Jeezy with this, and that it feels like it doesn't just feel like you're being intimate. It feels like you're being intimate and claiming space or trying to be seen or protesting in a sort of by being who you want to be.
But that's kind of interesting. I don't know. It can feel kind of awesome though as well. But oh, totally. I just want it to be. So you know, you remember in the Arts Centre in Christchurch. So where we both grew up, there's this beautiful older lesbian couple that was there, and they'd be like out in the shops like every Sunday, and they had a beautiful dog. But just like everyone knew who they were purely because they were the only like gay people being openly affectionate in the city, as far as I knew when I was growing up. Mm. So they'd always like get an ice cream and sit on a bench outside where the Court Theatre is. And in a way, it's kind of like so nice to see, but also like it shouldn't be such a rarity that they would become famous to people working there just because of that.
Yeah, oof. Visibility is key, and that's why like even these small moments, like I mean the microsecond in Beauty and the Beast, are like are really valid, important steps forward.
Totally, but just next time Disney could just make like a slightly longer moment,
or just like a just kiss,
just like maybe a cooler character, like just Lippo's a little dick.
Hey, that's all the time we've got for today, my friends. We've got to roll on. It's
what a pleasure.
What a pleasure, Eli, to touching base with you, my friend.
Yeah. It's 4:26 here, if you're going to ask. Miss 4:20, so I'm never getting high.
We talked right. You're never getting high again. And it is almost dinner time for me here, and my stomach is making so much noises. So
hey, just before we go as well, if anyone's in Melbourne at the moment, I've got 5 more shows.
Get
at the Forum Theatre, 9:45 or 8:45 on Sunday. And I've met a couple of male gaze fans already. And I tell you what, I loved it. And I'd love to meet any more. And I'm doing Sydney as well.
Woo,
Sydney Festival and Auckland and Wellington. And I can't wait to see everyone.
And if you're in Auckland, just hang out. Say hello. If you see me on the street, just give me a little nod.
Hold Chris's hand.
Hold my hand and let's be visible together. And thank you so much to Big Pipe for sponsoring this episode of The Male Gaze.
We love you, Big Pipe.
Boop, thanks.
Boop, boop,
boop. Pew.
I'm sorry, Mom. Sorry, Mom. It's not a phase.
Thanks for listening to this Little Empire podcast. We've got live shows happening in the New Zealand International Comedy Festival powered by Flick Electric Co. So go to comedyfestival.co.nz and buy tickets now. Meanwhile, if you enjoyed this show, maybe you should listen to The Worst Idea of All Time with Guy Montgomery and Tim Batt.
Ow! This movie's still fine. Zuccoli, pasta.
Those set dresses. They have a good time, don't they?
You know, I would argue that we are the most set dress positive podcast.
Yeah. Set dress positive. I like that.
On the market.
I think you could be right. And it's important to have your niche. It doesn't matter what it is. You just got to occupy something. You know what we're occupying? Set positivity.
That's right.
Classic Maximum Joseph.
You forget that films are supposed to have a point.